It's Monday, and I'm your host, Jeremy. This is the RSM podcast, where we review movies that people have deemed to be really shitty and make our own choices as we cringe sometimes through them. To my left is someone throwing me dagger eyes, my lovely wife, Ree.
Because Teen Witch is a great movie.
Yeah, that we'll have to see about that. And about 40 miles to my southeast is my good friend Mike.
That's me.
That is the Mike. We are coming to you a bit late. We had some scheduling conflicts due to Mother's Day last weekend, but we're back on the ground, and I'm actually promising our audience a bonus episode this coming weekend. I'm getting together with a couple friends. We're reviewing a independent movie called Starship Rising. I've seen it once before, and it's just one of those movies that my brain just sort of melts a little every time I think about it. So that's going to be fun. And then, of course, we'll be back next Monday with a new episode, and we'll find out what that's going to be at the end of this episode. So, Ree, why don't you tell us what movie we're reviewing today?
The beautiful in 1980-something classic. Classic Teen Witch.
Teen Witch.
Really? Is that the synopsis we're going with?
Yeah, we are.
And then Mike, why don't you tell us what this movie was about?
Okay. It was, I guess it was like a tale of female power, edge, and ego with supernatural undertones. It was really a bizarre, like, musical sort of thing centered around high school and this chick who, like, wanted to be everything that the quote-unquote popular click girls were, and she couldn't be without getting these supernatural powers, I guess. But I think I would call it, at the end of the day, if, like, I was to really describe it in just a couple of words, I would call it something similar to, like, a chick flick cult classic, which there aren't many of those around.
Ree, a rebuttal?
I don't know if it has to be a chick flick. Guys could like this movie, too. I don't think you need to gender the audience.
I'm not gendering the audience. I'm calling a chick flick. They can be whatever gender they want to be, but I feel that it's specifically made around teenage chicks, so then it would be a chick flick.
I think that there was definitely a throw for appeal to guys. That is something we're going to get into a little bit later once we actually start dissecting the plot here. But yeah, it's about a young woman who finds her power in finding her power. And it's sort of the classic be careful what you wish for when you're given ultimate power kind of tales. I gotta say, I know that I'm jaded and my mind is warped, but there were so many times I was expecting this movie to have a dark undertone to it, and it didn't in any way, shape, or form. So I guess I was kind of pissed off by the end of it, because I actually turned to Ree at the very last scene of this movie, and the credits started rolling and my hands went up in the air. I was like, wait, that's it? That's it? That's how this movie ends? What the fuck? Like, what are you doing? No, there's so much more that could happen right now, and so many questions that I have that haven't been answered. So I don't know. Is there a Teen Witch 2?
No, but this movie did make you want more, so it can't be that bad, can it?
I wouldn't say it made me want more. I would say it left me wanting so much. But let's get into it. Mike, do you have some facts about what was going on in this time period in the late 80s? It was released in 1989.
Yeah. In 1986, we see Fox Broadcasting Company is launched and becomes the first network since Dumont to offer, like, nightly programming for the world, which is actually kind of nice. Obviously, it's changed a lot since then, but it used to be for entertainment and maybe a little bit of news, and it became something else entirely. In 1987, we see actually a really terrible event occurs. A Dow Jones Industrial Average falls 22.6 points in a single session. This was in the U.S. and most of the world, also called Black Monday, where, you know, our economies are just really fucked by this. If you live in Australia, it's called Black Tuesday, you know, because of the time difference.
Why can't it be White Monday?
I mean, that's a good question. Why is darkness associated with evil? Anyway, so 1988.
We just touched the dark.
Yep. In 1988, drunk driving awareness is raised after a drunk driver crashes into a school bus filled with people. 17 people die in the preceding accident. Yeah.
What level of school? Like middle school? High school?
It was a church bus.
Oof.
Right? No, it's pretty terrible, man. But at least it brought, you know, something to the table. Like, drunk driving started to be more prevalent, or was more prevalent, and then they started cracking down on it because of things like this happening. And then in 1989, George W. Bush is inaugurated president.
Ugh.
Or H.H.W. Bush, I should say. My apologies. And then the last, I think, is actually kind of important, even though I believe it happens right as the movie comes out, is there was a stalker who stalked and murdered an actress named Rebecca Schaefer. And he was just
I remember hearing that on my murder podcast that I like to listen to.
Yeah. And that was in 1989. And they actually, almost all of the stars that played in this movie showed up to various different televised events to bring awareness to the murder and to talk about it. So,
and one other thing I'll say that did happen before this movie came out was Dirty Dancing was released a few years before this movie.
That's true.
That kind of brings us into the beginning of this movie, which is a dream sequence that our main character, the teen witch Louise, is having, where she's dressed in this very tight red dress with
slinky.
A very slinky dress, and she's dancing on a rooftop with a lot of neon on it with the love interest, which is a boy from high school, we find out later. But it's, you can just, the way that they dress this boy, I know it was the 80s and a lot of people dressed like this, but I really feel whoever directed this scene specifically had a huge Swayze fetish. And it was Dirty Dancing 2.0 right now. It is a dream sequence, and she comes out of it to her alarm. And she's your normal teenage girl, hair out to here, wearing a very
80s nightgown.
Yes, very flowy. And we get to meet the first two characters besides her are her brother and her mother. Both very strange characters from the get go.
I don't know. I think the brother is a great character in this.
He's so weird, though. Like, the way he speaks and the specific dialogue that he's given.
But my kind of theory is that, like, they play him up to seem like how a teenage girl would see her little brother. Like, extra weird, very annoying. Mm-hmm. And so he comes off that way because it's her point of view.
I kind of like that because that puts a little bit of a different perspective on this movie for me. And the way that people are acting is not that this is the reality that we're put in, but we're actually put into her reality of how the world is around her.
Yeah.
As if, you know, it's a story that she's telling and we're only getting her point of view of the world itself, not how it actually is.
Yeah.
That's interesting. What are your thoughts, Mike?
It's a beautiful movie and you love it, right?
So I enjoy Dirty Dancing. that I think this the problem this movie had is that it tried to do too much, I think, in too little time. And it tried to develop all of these side characters like rapid fire style. So like in the first couple of shots they do, and, you know, you talked about the dream sequence, they introduce her love interest, but there's literally no speaking between the two of them. It's all literal, like, physicality, and you have that little dance number that I thought was actually a little awkward when they were on the side of the roof, and it seemed like both of them were taking, like, kind of fearful steps, her more so than him, because obviously she's not looking where she's stepping versus he's able to look where he's stepping. And like, it just all felt very awkward to me, that first dream sequence. Then we jump directly into her kid brother underneath her bed, like just stuffing his face as he reads her diary.
Oh man, he was so bizarre.
Yeah. Well, all the characters were really bizarre, but I think that's more, it's supposed to show the audience how alienated she is. I think
because
I think
she's so point. Normal.
Because she's normal and her family's bizarre, and then when she tries to go and be normal at school, she gets a bunch of shit from these other girls just because her life isn't picture cookie perfect. Which I think is, again, it's like a hand reaching out to whatever audience might be viewing this, primarily I would assume teenage girls, and saying, hey, you know, don't worry about it, life will get better. But then you throw like musical bits into it, and then you throw the magic into it, and I'm just like, I don't. There's too much going on here.
By about the second song, I looked at Rhea. I was like, is this a musical? And she said, nope, no. It's kind of.
Yeah, it's kind of a musical.
It's not kind of a musical.
There's like more than four songs sung by characters in the movie.
Whatever.
And they're sung as parts of the movie, as like legitimate things that are happening. So yeah, it's definitely a musical. It's definitely a cult classic musical. But I would add chick flick on the front of that. But yeah, that's how I see it.
So Louise gets ready for school and has dinner with her parents, who are both very awkward.
She's getting
Did
breakfast.
I say dinner?
Yeah.
Okay. She's having breakfast with her parents and. But again, both parents in this, at least in this scene, later on in the movie, it seemed like their wackiness toned down. And I guess that's, you know, like Rhea and I were talking about, as the movie progresses, she gets, you know, wiser or more learned about how the world and reality is working around her. And that could be the sort of the tell off on that. But they're both kind of overacting parents, and it was very awkward to sit through this breakfast with them. And then she goes outside and meets her best friend. They're going to bicycle to school together. And we get to see Dreamboat drive up in his sweet car. And
yeah, Brad.
Brad.
Oh, my God.
Brad. The popular girl who just happens to live right across the street from Louise gets picked up by Brad. And there's a line in there where her awkward friend says, gosh, how does she do that? And Louise looks at her and says, jeans.
She means like body jeans, not physical jeans.
Oh yeah, there was a lot of jeans in this movie. I'm just gonna point that out. Jean jackets, jean jeans.
I'm sure there were
jean socks somewhere that I didn't see.
True. Well, I don't know about jean socks, but the rest of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Then we get to see them at school. We get to sort of see how the school civilization is sort of built out. And we get our first glimpse of rapper guys. And, man, like the whole reason I put this movie on the list is because I saw the top that scene on YouTube. And I still wasn't prepared for how much I would loathe these three buffoons and how, like, their characters are just walking, talking cultural appropriation.
Well, and I would also like to point out this is when we realized that Louise is highly intelligent and she skipped two grades.
Yeah.
She's in all senior classes and she's not a senior.
True.
That's kind of cool that they had like an actual smart person.
Yeah.
Or a smart female character, even though she does dumb things.
And she's, and again, with the sort of growing mentality of this movie, every person at the school, besides the theater teacher, every adult is an absolute dick. Her English teacher is like a complete asshole. He calls her out in class and
purposely.
And then they have this like poetry assignment that they have to turn in. And he reads hers out loud without reading it over to himself first. And it's, of course, it calls out Brad and how much she's in love with him.
Well, and it's part of her diary because her brother ripped that page out of her diary. And then she put it in her binder when her mom came in.
Because it was stuck by the chocolate that he was eating under her bed.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, he was like, he not only read it and realized that it was super embarrassing and that people were laughing, but then he like continues to prod after that. And I was just like, man, I was really hoping for a Carrie moment at the end of this movie, just where she just flips and her witch powers go crazy and she just like cuts the entire school to pieces. But as we'll get through the rest of this movie, you'll see I was sorely disappointed.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know why.
Well, and then the next scene is them in the locker room.
Oh, man.
And that's when the I like boys scene happened.
Yeah, Mike, I have to ask, did you feel as awkward watching? I was sitting there watching, and I was like, I am a 28-year-old man watching high schooler girls dance around in their bathing suits to a song like I Like Boys. And I felt so awkward. I almost wanted to close my eyes.
So do you remember when I said this is a chick flick?
Yeah.
I'm going to reference that statement again. Because, yeah, you're right. This movie, like I said, I feel like it was specifically designed and designated for women, and specifically for women of that particular age range. Like, that's the only way I can see this movie working. Maybe some teenage guys would go and see it.
Like, see, I kind of disagree on that. Right. I think that this scene specifically points to the opposite.
Yeah, half-naked girls dancing around in the locker room.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if you put yourself in the mentality of a teenage boy in this era, and this movie was PG when it came out, you know, so it was just something you could go and you can go watch girls your age dancing around in their bathing suits and yeah, I don't know. So I guess we'll have to agree to disagree on that, Mike.
Fair enough.
And then of course, we get to meet another adult in this, the female gym teacher who is, from Helga's House of Pain.
Yeah. Female gym teacher is female gym teacher.
Yep.
Like very obviously. She couldn't play any other besides like a masseuse. She could be like a massage therapist or a female
or
teacher.
Or a drill sergeant.
Yeah. No, I don't think, not with that hair. She had the full on like braided buns.
Louise ducks away from her her physical education to watch a mid-drift football throwing Brad practicing out in the field to some very light synthesizer music. Where she watches this teenage boy slowly peel off his sweaty jersey and start doing
football sit-ups or whatever.
So he starts doing sit-ups.
No, he doesn't. He's throwing the football.
When he takes off his shirt, he goes down and starts doing sit-ups.
Oh, yeah, I guess he does. You're right.
And she's just like, she's stalkery. Super stalkery staring at him.
Yeah.
Yeah, the gawking was a little much. It was a little unnecessary. But he sees her. He, like, turns and sees her, and then she sinks into the shadows.
Yeah.
No one will ever
like
see
a stalker.
Me. And she was wearing a trench coat, so, you know, let that in.
We find out that Louise is not only going to be elected the president of Latin Club and is 2 years ahead in her classes, but is also a theater nerd, and she's trying out for the play and just so happens to be paired with Brad for her tryouts and just so happens to be doing a part of the play that has to do with magic and the dialogue. And they sort of leave it open. Like, is she actually enchanting him or is this just part of the tryout? You know, but she doesn't get the part. Alas, it's Brad and the most popular girl get the two parts. And she plays, I believe, the mistress. Was the character?
No, she plays the costume mistress. She doesn't even get a part in the play.
The costume mistress.
She gets to do the costumes.
Nice.
And she's the understudy for the lead.
Which is ridiculous because the way that her and Brad acted on that stage was like there was chemistry. There was, you know, there was.
I can't tell if you're being facetious or not.
No, I was a theater nerd. I know this.
But we didn't get to see the other girl's performance, though.
That's true.
So she could have been 1,000 times better.
That's true. Just because she's popular, let's admit, doesn't mean that she wasn't a good actress.
Yeah.
So after drama tryouts, she is riding her bike home from school in the dark. And Brad just happens to almost run her over.
With his girlfriend, making out all over him.
Yeah. There's very sexual car scenes on this.
True.
And he runs her off the road and she refuses to let him drive her home because she can barely stand to like look at him in the face when he's that close to her. So he drives off with a popular girl and She only then discovers that she has popped a tire on her bicycle. So she starts walking home, and there's a perfectly timed plot storm. Yeah. And which
starts strands, raining.
Yeah, it starts raining, and it strands her right in front of the house of...
Madame Zolchar? Is that what her name is?
Serena. Madame Serena.
Yeah, Madame Serena.
So who's, of course, another white woman.
Is she, though? Is Zelda... What's her name? Zelda... Yeah, Zelda Rubinstein. I think she's dead now.
Rubinstein! Yeah,
she died in 2010.
Mike, what was your... what was your impression of Madame Serena?
Well, so... She is a con artist, but she's the best kind of con artist. And by that, I mean she's only interested in her own self-interest, but she's more symbiotic and not completely a dickhead. So she wants them also to get something out of it.
Yeah.
Definitely a artist.
She basically cons this teenage girl who's stranded in the rain out of the only $6 that she has to her name right now and to give her a palm reading. And she actually, I have written down the line is, she says, I like your cutesy little punky Brewster face.
Cutesy little punky Brewster face.
And so she cons her out of $6 and starts doing, you know, the whole psychic palm reading, cold reading technique. And actually realizes through her palm that she is actually a witch. And
still doesn't give her those $6 back.
Though. Still does not give her those
$6. Keeps that $6.
Keeps her money. And she's just like, you're going to start coming into your power once your 16th birthday hits. And she's like, yeah, right, lady. And she leaves in the middle of the storm. And it immediately cuts to her 16th birthday, which is like a week later. And, of course, she's in her home with her mom, her dad, and her little brother. And her little brother is staring at her birthday cake like it, like he's the second to last guy in the Dahmer party. Mm-hmm. He just like... Again, fat kid is fat kid. This kid will not stop at anything to eat all the sugar in the world. And, of course, Louise is unpopular, so no one's coming because one of the popular girls threw a party in the same day. But best friend is best friend, and she's going to show up, and she, of course, alerts Louise to the reason why nobody's coming to her birthday party.
Yeah, the travesty that it is.
Yeah. And nothing really else interesting happens in that scene. It's literally just cuts to her sleeping. And then it cuts to the worst sex ed class ever.
I don't know. I felt like it was better than my sex ed class.
Really? Was your teacher more awkward than that teacher?
Yeah.
No.
I feel sorry for you. I had like a really straightforward sex ed class.
Me too. Yeah. Like two of them, as a matter.
But you went? Did you go to? You went to high school in Georgia, though, right?
No, I went to high school in Arizona.
Really?
Yeah.
Public school.
Yep, public school.
Yeah, I feel sorry for you, brother. I had the opportunity to go to charter school from 7th to the end of high school, so that was lucky.
Yeah, because you're weird. You would not have survived in a real public school.
Right. They all start chanting condom at the teacher. Condom. Yeah,
that was weird.
And again, this scene doesn't really serve any other purpose than to just be a silly high school scene, as far as I remember. There was no driving plot force behind this scene. Mm-hmm. They just had to fill out that, you know, they cut this movie and they only had like 57 minutes and they had to fill it out with ridiculous scenes.
Yeah, and this was the home ec teacher too, which I find kind of strange.
Yeah.
Why would you have the home ec teacher instead of like an actual educational teacher?
Right.
Based in like science, give you, you know, why not have a science teacher?
That's what I mean. For me, it was a science teacher. Yeah, that did it.
So it was mine.
Then again, we do another superfluous cut to, Louise not able to get a soda out of the soda machine, and Brad comes up and does the Fonzie thing where he just hits the machine in the right spot, and of course it falls out and she swoons.
Of course.
Yeah, after he molested the soda machine.
He did totally, just like Jim Carrey and the Cable Guy when he's trying to find that sweet spot right there.
Oh, God.
Yep, that's it.
Then we get some exposition between Louise and the theater teacher, who was a really interesting character. I really like that actress. Mm-hmm. And she, could you look up her name for me?
Yeah, babe? I will.
we have a conversation between them where we find out that the theater teacher used to be doing theater and thought she was really good and had the best performance of her life and then never got another audition after that. And
Marcia Wallace.
We also do find, she does find her talisman while she's hanging out with the theater teacher, just hanging in the props department. They find her little talisman.
Well, that's sad. She died of breast cancer.
Thanks for bringing us down, Ree.
You're welcome.
Then as she's walking back to class with her best friend, a popular girl stops by her and says, "Hey, my cousin's coming to town and he needs a date for the spring formal, like, or the whatever, the fall formal, whatever it is." And she's like, "Oh, of course.
No,
like,
way.
Popular girl wants to do something for me." And of course, I wrote down immediately, never trust popular girl. Making classic movie mistake here.
Yep, makes sense.
Going back to theater teacher Marcia Wallace, she voiced since 1989 the character of Edna Krabappel on The Simpsons, the teacher.
Just died a couple years ago.
Yeah, she died in 2013.
Yeah. Wow, I didn't know that was her.
Yep.
That's adorable. Thank you, Ree.
Yep. You're welcome. She's also in a movie called That's My Bush. So,
Well, that makes sense.
Take that.
And I have to actually get a picture of this up in front of me to explain it properly. She's getting ready for the dance and her mother has picked her outfit. This is where we realize that her mother is blind.
Yeah.
Let me hold on.
Not actually blind.
What did you think of this outfit, Mike?
Just the pink and green striped sweater vest.
Really
a vest. It's just like a sweater minus the sleeves.
Yeah. It's
like that like long
olive peasant, green yeah, peasant olive skirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like if I met a chick at a bar that was wearing that, I would have to walk up and have a conversation with her because she seems like she'd be very interesting. And considering that no one else is probably going to do it, like you know me and I'm like, you're unique. I need to go have a conversation with you. So it would work on me if I was a kid in high school, just because I'd be like, that's very interesting.
That's somebody I need to know.
Interesting, yeah. Interesting. And why do you smell like cabbage?
Yeah, she also seems like the kind of person that would also have an exorbitant amount of cat hair on them.
Oh, yeah. Like just the look of her.
Look of her. You're like, maybe. You have some cat dander.
Or, you know, if she was a little bit older, like, you know, if she was in her mid to late 20s, or even early 30s, she just could be a really kinky librarian.
I feel like you're pushing a lot of your fantasies on the podcast right now.
I feel like the podcast needs more of my fantasies, if anything. Anyway.
So her date shows up at the door, and of course, Creepy Cousin is creepy. This guy's straight out of, like, the Revenge of the Nerds snuff film.
Yeah, he's just, yeah, he definitely looks like he has an inhaler and like his front pocket real close to him. Very asthmatic. His hair was nice though. I liked his like
he definitely liked Flock of Seagulls.
Yeah, well, he had like Guido hair almost, like Jersey Shore guy hair that's like all like weird and spiked but also slicked back. It was kind of bizarre.
I feel like they definitely tried to make him like creepy and undesirable. And then the actor definitely pulled off the creepy, undesirable dude act.
Right.
But I just like, yeah.
It was over the top.
It was definitely over the top. It was, and on purpose, obviously. But also, like, I kind of didn't like the fact that they tried to push all those stereotypes onto the lonely, nerdy dude with glasses, you know?
Well, yeah. That's the 80s, you know? You beat up on those kind of guys.
Right.
So they get to the dance, and we get a good glimpse of 80s teenage fashion in this scene. There's definitely a lot of crinoline. It's pretty interesting. And then Louise goes to the bathroom and pulls a 180 and turns into Cyndi Lauper and walks out in a very, very unique little dance outfit. Of course, nerdy guy looks at her. He's like, "What are you trying to do? Embarrass me?" And this is when Louise lost all my respect. She said, "Hey, nice bow tie." And I was like, "Oh, no, 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 lady. You do not knock the bow tie." Bow ties are cool.
That's where it ended for
you. That's where it ended. You know, if she had said anything about a fez, I would have shut the movie off immediately.
Really? I think you're lying. I think you probably would have still watched it, so you could have, you know, done this episode.
Nope. I would have been like, you guys are doing this solo, Han style.
You're like, this is my podcast, and for this episode, I'm going to go and play a video game while my friends review the movie.
Yep. Oh, yeah, and of course, creepy guy, like, looks at her, and they're watching people dance, and he just looks over, and he's like, you want to smoke some weed?
Yeah. Yeah, and she said no. I mean, you know how many people have offered me drugs in my youth? Exactly zero.
Really?
Like,
and she was like, zero? She was like, no pot, no pills, no pregnancy or something like that. Like,
I have never had anybody just walk up to me and be like, hey, you want some drugs? And I feel like it was...
You always have to ask for it, right?
I know. And I feel like when I was younger, I thought it was going to be like a lot bigger of a problem where people would just be offering me drugs all the time. And now I wish it would happen.
Oh, man. And she's had this line when she's talking to best friend about the cousin. She says, don't worry, I have a little brother. I know about men.
Oh, God.
And I just facepalmed at that point. I was like, oh, honey, you don't know what's coming. Oh, man. So we get to see a little glimpse of her power starting to come to fruition. She's with best friend staring at Brad, who's sitting with popular girl. And she says something to the effect of, you know, I wish he'd look over at me. And he looks over at her, and they both sort of giggle to each other. She's like, oh, I wish he would come over. And he sort of looks back at his girlfriend and then gets up and walks over to her and takes her outside. They have a nice little stare at the stars. And she gets close to being romantic with him, but then a popular girlfriend shows up and takes him away and lets creepy cousin drive her home. And there's some serious sexual molestation that happens in this scene for a PG
where she
movie.
she says no several times.
And he continues to grab her
and then try to like push her head down to his manhood. And
I had it written down because this is what he literally says in this scene. I can drive through a fog like a hog with a heart on. And I wrote down she's totally being sexually assaulted. Sending someone to the nether realm would be definitely justified right now. Again, this is where my version. So I've sort of alluded to this with both Rhi and Mike, as we've been sort of pre-talking about this before we started recording, is that in my remake of this movie, which it totally could be remade, but I would make it, it would at least be PG-13 and it would be dark as fuck. And this is the point where it would start taking a really dark turn. Cause, I mean, she literally says, I wish you would just disappear. And he disappears. And we never hear from this character ever.
And no
again.
One goes to look for him. They're just like, thank God that guy's gone.
Yep. And like literally, so in my mind, she would have said that and he would have been transported to the nether realm where he's like eaten for all eternity or something like that.
And then the Sith comes out again.
So she narrowly misses crashing the car because he was driving and then he wasn't. And she gets home and...
Wait.
Little brother.
Wait, so that's where that pit goes in the Fane. It goes to the nether realm where we'll be eaten for eternity.
Oh, well, yeah, you caught me, Mike. Mike's alluding to a role play that we're currently running, and he's been trying to get little bits out of me for a while, and it's not working.
Yeah, Jeremy's a steel trap, man. I'm his wife, and I can't even get shit out of him.
Oh, well, I didn't know that you guys were moving on to pegging.
Depends on how deep you put your finger, baby.
Ew. You are so editing this out. I'm saying that so you know.
This is gold.
Oh, man. So she gets home, and little brother is making a marshmallow pizza. And it's not just a marshmallow pizza, but it's maybe a 27-inch pizza just covered in large marshmallows. And like candy and just handfuls.
Yeah, it's real gross.
It is super disgusting.
It's basically the elf from the movie The Spaghetti version, but on a pizza. Yeah, that's what it is.
Chocolate syrup sitting on the counter, like, and she accidentally turns him into a talking dog, and gets the genius idea to try and hide him in a bath that's fully made in her room.
Yeah, like bubbles and everything. Yeah, which was very bizarre.
There was a full bubble bath waiting for her in her room.
Yep, turns her brother into a dog. Yep.
And so that we find out that water, because she's such a young witch, that water can remove her spells because they're not potent enough. Yeah. And so she, the next day at school, she's in the locker room again with the other girls, and the popular girl's talking with her two best friends, and she uses a spell from Madame Serena that makes you have to tell the truth, and all of the popular girls start barking at each other these insults. And the one that really drives it up a notch is one of them looks at the other one and she just says, "You're too lazy to do your roots." And the other one goes, "Shut up, skank." And then they push each other and it becomes a little brawling match.
I'm pretty sure she doesn't say skank.
She says skank. Does she says, really? "Shut up, skank." And she shoves her.
Really, skank was a thing.
Yep.
But okay.
So then she goes back to Madame Serena, who we find out is low on magic. She's trying to do magic, but she can't. So Louise helps her out. And we also find out that they've known each other in past lives. They always sort of find each other and they do fun things together. And it was at this point, again, the dark Sith inside of me is watching this. And, Madame Serena is asking for her help and asking her to lend her, some magic power to do the spell. And I was like, oh, my God. Madame Serena is totally using her. Like, at the end of this movie, Madame Serena is, going to go dark witch and try and steal this young witch's powers for herself to make herself powerful again. Nope. Nothing ever comes of this. Oh, it's just
a feel-good literally movie.
Just, yeah, it's a total feel-good movie. It's so lame, in my opinion. So, yeah, I thought at this point that Madame Serena was totally a villain. The next spell we get to see is a voodoo doll. Mike, why don't you tell me what exactly happens with this voodoo doll?
Well, you see her making it in her room, and I kind of got excited for a second in the movie. I was like, wait a second, we're going to get some actual, hoodon, or we're going to get some, real voodoo. Ooh, yeah. And I was really excited because, okay, cool, I might be able to get into this movie a little bit. And she's sitting in her room making the doll, and at first I was like, okay, well, there was no scene where she gathered his hair, but I guess that's easy enough to do. But then I see that there really isn't any hair on the doll, and there doesn't seem to be anything packed into the doll on the back, or there's no evidence of any blood on it. I'm like, okay, cool. So this is not going to be a real voodoo scene. And then what happens?
It's basically just a really nice home ec project.
Right, exactly. Yeah, it looks like a really, really nice thought out project for a doll that you're going to sit on your shelf or something. So then she takes this doll to school. And my first thought is, okay, cool. She's got it under the desk. It's dressed just like the teacher. He's going to be a dumbass and take it from her and start roughing it up and fuck himself up. Oh, no. No. She makes him undress himself in front of his entire class. This guy who has got to be in his 60s.
He's late 60s. Yeah,
he's got to be in his 60s at least. All gray hair. Very an appropriate speaker. All of his words are curt and perfectly pronunciated, and he is speaking to his class about a romance novel as he undresses himself in front of them.
Of course, principal walks in at the proper time before he can remove his underwear.
Yeah, or Louise makes him remove his underwear. That's true.
I felt like I would have preferred it to be a real voodoo doll where she's stabbing things into it and he's feeling pain.
That's what I was waiting for, because I of course watched this movie several times in my life, but I don't remember everything. I'm not that kind of person.
Well, we do get to see a little bit of that, because she goes home and, being a young witch who doesn't know any better, just lays the voodoo doll on the little counter by the door, and so of course, fugly little brother picks it up and
that was nice.
Goes up to the top of the stairs and just throws it behind him, and it tumbles down the stairs. And of course, at the same time, teacher is being walked out of the school, and he falls down the stairs. And then mom finds it and sees that it's got a bunch of chocolate crap all over it. So she tosses it in the washer, and he walks into a car wash. Again, not the route that I would have taken in this movie. You put him in the car wash. He starts flailing about, breaking all of his bones. Seriously, just some creepy voodoo shit would be going on.
Well, and then you finally got to see your first person of color in this movie, though.
Yes, finally a minority. There was a darker skinned fella washing cars, of course. And that was, I was, you know, 1 point for this movie for not being a completely white cast.
It got a little bit better at the end.
I feel like it fit with the movie, dude. Like the whole movie is kind of that. It's kind of this
about white people problems.
It's like a fantasy. It's like a fantasy world where like everything is chill and everything's going to work out. And, you know, nobody's really, everybody's out for themselves, but nobody's out to get anybody else. And it's like, that's not really how it works, especially not in high school. There's some fucked up individuals that are specifically out to get you.
All right, moving on. Okay. Next. Top that. And if you're a good little listener, you would have gone on last week when I mentioned it and checked this video out on YouTube to see what we were getting into.
Also, you're condescending as fuck. If you're a good little listener, you probably should never listen to what Jeremy says.
Don't listen to that. He is also a GM. He's manipulating you. it's again, we get to have some fun with rapper boys, where they're just, you know, rapping to their boombox in the middle of the street and throwing their shirts around and their hands up. And of course, Best Friend is kind of enamored with main rapper, white dude. And, she just looks at him. She's like, I could never be as funky as him.
He would never go for me. And yeah. Louise goes, why? He's so funky.
Of course, then Louise, wiggles her nose or whatever, and
cross reference.
Best friend starts rapping along to the song and sort of does top that to the guy, and then they of course ride away all bundles of joy.
Bundles of joy.
Then Louise decides what is really important to her. What does she really need? What will make her life whole is to be the most popular girl in school.
No, you're missing a good chunk.
Am I?
Yeah, when she decides that she wants Brad to love her, so she gets the love potion to sprinkle in her room first.
That's right. We did skip over that. That was a couple scenes ago.
Yeah, and all the fucking chairs that were missing.
We're watching this scene and they keep like, Brad comes into her room. He's like, where are the chairs? She's like, I don't know. You know,
getting
I
guess, upholstered.
Guess, yeah. They're getting upholstered. I guess we'll have to sit on my bed. And so he goes over and sits on the bed. And then young brother like barges into the room. He's like, where are the chairs? And she's like, I don't know. Leave me alone. And he closes the door and then goes sit on the bed again. And then dad barges in. He's like, hey, where are all the chairs? And she's like, they're gone. I don't know where they went. Leave us alone. But yeah. Then she decides that she can't go through with it.
Yeah, I can't do the love potion on her.
She doesn't want him to love her because of magic. She wants him to love her because she's her. So she goes and opens up her closet. And, of course, all of the chairs are stacked in her closet. Mm-hmm. All of the chairs in the house are stacked in her fucking closet.
Yeah, she has a lot of chairs in there.
So it's a pretty lot of closet area.
True. But if you're a teenage girl, you need that for all your outfits.
It's true.
That's it.
All your sweaters. She wears a lot of sweaters in this movie. So Madame Serena gives her a green milk that is apparently the last of her power. And and she has to get a couple of more ingredients because she wants to be like her musical idol, Sheena, who we found out was not an actual singer.
Shauna.
She wasn't an actual singer, but she did do the music for the movie.
Well, no, she is a musician. She was just not, that character was not a real singer.
Yeah.
But she really was actually singing.
So she uses her magic to get Shauna to give her like jacket that she's had since the beginning of her tour. Again, using your magic to, you know, benefit yourself.
Fuck other people.
You could have done so much more, Louise. You had the power of the universe in your hands. Search your feelings. You know it to be true.
Yeah.
Give me something, Mike. Come on. Wake up.
I am awake. I'm just this movie, man. Like, there's not a whole lot to say about it.
It just happens.
It really does just happen. Like, all the different scenes that you see in this movie as they're going through, they're not unexpected. They're very scripted. In my mind, they seem very scripted, and you know what's going to happen before it happens. So, Like,
yeah, it was basically a trope upon a trope upon a trope.
Yeah, and all of it had been done before. And all they did was they just conglomerated the scenes together in a slightly different way. And they added the aspect of magic into it, which was the one thing that I thought was kind of cool. But honestly, they fucked that up for me, too. So, yeah. Like, that's my feelings on the movie. Like, yeah. I was like, oh, this could be so good. And then it's not. And then I'm like, oh, this could be so good. And then it's not. Yeah. The top that scene was the same, and the scene where she's in the room with him is exactly the same as well. Like, the elements of magic are prepped before he enters the room, and then they're never initiated, so we don't get to see a cool spell. So I'm just kind of like, all right, I'm, you know.
Right, and I don't remember what movie it is, but I was really expecting what to happen was to him to fall for her, but then the spell to backfire where he is, like, completely obsessed. Consumed. Yeah.
That would have been cool.
I think that's a very Joss Whedon thing in my mind. That happened in Buffy. But yeah, like, he just goes completely obsessed with her. But yeah, no, she chickens out, but she doesn't chicken out of using the popularity spell.
Right, of course not, because how could that go wrong?
Right. No, that's, she doesn't want to manipulate one person. She wants to manipulate her entire school, which also causes her new friend who's been teaching her to give her the rest of her power just so she can be popular. And that is, of course, the most important thing, you know, to a young
girl. Oh, yeah. How dare she manipulate the witch that manipulated her?
Right. Who conned her out of her $6. You owe me. You owe me. So, of course, she uses the popularity spell. And, of course, now she ignores her best friend. And she's, of course, okay with dudes catcalling her in droves. Like, literally a line of cars of guys from her high school catcalling her out
the
windows.
And that's where you see some other minorities. Yeah. In the car with the rapping dudes.
Rapping dudes that are catcalling the woman. Yeah. Yeah. Very progressive 80s movie. Thanks, Disney.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I think that the catcalling in this aspect is exactly what she wanted. She wants to be the center of attention. So
clearly.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, she did. I mean, I feel like she really would have she could have just been the center of Brad's attention. That would have been enough for her. But she went to these extreme bounds because, in my mind, that's really what she wants, is for Brad to pay attention to her. So that's why she causes the entire school to pay attention to her.
Yeah, because if everyone's staring, right. Brad will also stare.
If she's the most popular girl, then, of course, Brad will be hers because that's all he cares about, is being with the most popular girl.
Yep.
And so he does, of course, pay attention to her, and then he takes her on a little date. And in my soul, I knew this was a Disney movie, but he takes her to an abandoned house.
Yeah, it got real weird.
I thought something really bad was going to happen. It's literally just a little romantic makeout session. It implies that he takes her virginity, I want to say, but it's not ever fully spelled disclosed, out.
Yeah. Oh, they definitely do it.
They did. I mean, they started with taking off their shoes, then they walked up a flight of stairs, and then they took off their jackets, and then they walked up another flight of stairs, and then they took off their shirts or something.
They didn't take off their shirts, but they laid down and started making out on the ground.
Oh, I think his shirt came off, but regardless. Yeah.
In an abandoned...
They definitely do it. Now, we don't know if her virginity was taken, because they may have done it anally.
That's true. It's true.
The loophole.
Literally the loophole.
It's the sex that God doesn't see. So you're fine. As long as your maidenhead is pure.
And again, this scene I had to write down again. This movie brought to you by the Dirty Dancing Film Fan Club.
Yeah.
They do it off camera. And then we cut to the big play happening. And she's helping popular girl Kiki get ready to go on stage. And... some dude walks behind them and he's like, don't say good luck. You know, it's bad luck to say good luck. And so, of course, Teen Witch turns to Kiki and she says, break a leg, Kiki. And Kiki's
not
like,
thinking about her witch powers.
Yeah. And so, of course, Kiki breaks her leg. And of course, Louise is the understudy. So Louise gets to be in the play after all. And that's how does she do in the play, Ree?
I don't know, because we don't. No.
We don't get to see any of it. Yeah. It literally skips to the next scene rather than showing us this thing that they alluded to prior and then becomes a part of the plot later. There's no resolution. One of my biggest problems with this movie is that there were so many setups with no resolution that I was just sitting there constantly waiting for something to happen, and nothing ever happens in this movie.
Yeah, it is kind of like it's very much like a total tease, I guess. Yeah. Like, it wants, there could be more. There could be a part two.
So here's where I started, like, disconnecting from the movie and zoning out and starting to write my rewrite of this movie. So not only would it be a lot darker, but she would discover when she tries to, when she first kisses Brad, she discovers that she's gay. And not only is she gay, but she by the end ends up with her best friend. And at first I thought it would have been interesting to turn around and make Brad gay. But I also think that it would be even interesting if she's gay and Brad ends up actually being a warlock that is also trying to steal her power. So, like, she begins trusting these people around her, and they're all trying to get something from her, basically. Get what makes her unique and what makes her special and take it from her. That's my, again, dark remake as things get crazier and crazier through this movie. But your thoughts, Mike?
I don't know about that remake. If I were to do a remake, I feel like I would have it be very similar, but I feel I would do more occult elements in the movie and more supernatural stuff. I don't mind the main character being a woman. I don't mind her being a teenager in high school. I think all those things are great for a witchy type movie. I mean, there are plenty of other things that out there, like Sabrina the Teenage Witch and whatnot, all those other shows and TV and movies and TV series. But I feel like this one really could have also been up there and been a really good one if they just delved more into the magic and less into the, like, really immature romantic interest and really, like, surface value, you know, what is important to you stuff, and delve into, like, the more dark elements of magic. It would have been a great movie that I would have enjoyed watching. They could have still had romance in it. They could have still had, like, high school drama in it. But if they'd focused more on the magic, I totally would have liked it.
See, and I agree with you on that. Like, I think that what in my remake, again, this is what would happen. It would start off with the same kind of bullshit. Like, she's unpopular. She doesn't have the guy she wants. Like, she has normal smart girl in a materialistic high school problems, right? And then she gets her magic. And then she starts realizing that reality and the world are much bigger than she previously thought. And all those like material wants and needs start to fade away as she comes into herself and starts realizing what is really important. Again, that's in my remake. She kind of learns that lesson by the end of this movie. But again, you're right. I believe that if there was more cult focus in this movie, it would have been a lot easier to stomach. I have a question. Where does a 9-year-old boy get a professional bellboy outfit?
Obviously he beats up the midget bellboy and takes it from him.
Well, I also want to know, because she did a spell to become popular, but did that change all of her clothes into popular kids'
clothes?
And her hair. And the fact that, what's her name? Madam Serena.
Her house changes.
Her whole house changes.
That's what I didn't understand. Well, I guess I kind of understand it because she uses Madam Serena's power to cast a spell. So I was thinking maybe that's why they're linked and why Madam Serena's luck starts to change. But again, this was feeding into the idea that, oh shit, Madam Serena is a villain and she's siphoning this girl's power. But yeah. No, again, sorry, I didn't mean to derail you. No,
that's basically where I was. I was just confused as to how all these, I get the emotional attachments to her and stuff, and how a spell could change that. I don't understand all of the physical things that she gained.
Her house is like a completely different. Yeah.
Yeah, it's very confusing. This movie's still great, though. I recommend you watching it.
So there is a cute little scene where she goes to see Madame Serena, and she asks her to, you know, if she can reverse the spell, and she says, well, you know, maybe, but why would you want to? This is like everything you wanted. And of course, you know, she's feeling down. So Madam Serena sits down in the little love seat and then pats her legs. And I have to spell this out for our listeners in case they didn't watch it. Madam Serena is like 4 feet tall.
She's 4'3", and she is an actual dwarf.
Yeah, she is very tiny. Yeah. And so she's on the love seat and she pats her leg. And this teenage girl goes and sits down on her lap, and she's like twice her size. and they both like sit there for a second and then they both start giggling really loud and they get up and switch spots. And that was very cute.
Yeah.
And we get, of course, the underlying message of the movie spelled out for us. She looks at her and she says, if you believe in yourself, you can make anything happen. Like, you don't have to rely on your magic, rely on yourself. It's not your magic that makes you special. It's you that makes your magic special, which is, again, cool. But
right.
Again, your magic makes you cool and you can do really beautiful, terrible things with it. So
calm down, my sweet Sith Lord. Calm down.
We get to the high school dance, which, of course, is called Moonlight and Magic. And there's, you know, everybody's
magical evening to be had.
Everybody's Whoa. Having fun. I had to write down the line from Not Another Teen Movie as they're all running around dancing. I look and I say, oh, never would have guessed everyone in this high school was a professional dancer.
No, there was some nerdy dancing going on, especially once the best friend got out on the dance floor.
Yeah, she yeah, did best
hard,
friend.
She went hard, man.
Yeah, best friend.
Polly's.
Polly?
Yeah.
Polly Princess jumps up and discovers her own inner strength and goes and does some really geeky dancing with rapper dude. Rapora, did you call him?
Rapper boy. Oh.
So, yeah, and then of course, Louise
and Brad
lock eyes, and they slow walk over to each other, and they start slow dancing, and she turns around and takes her talisman off and throws it to Madame Serena, who she's brought as her date to this dance. Now, I don't know how it was like in the 80s, but in my high school, I'm pretty sure you couldn't bring a full-grown adult as your date to prom.
Yeah, in my high school, you couldn't bring anybody 21 and older.
Yeah.
Because they didn't want people buying you alcohol, so you right. had to be 20 and younger.
And I'm pretty sure you couldn't chaperone a dance unless you were a parent of somebody at the high school.
Yeah, but I think they would... In this situation, I think they'd be okay with it because she's a popular girl. She doesn't have to follow the rules.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
The rules don't apply to the popular. Well, I think it would have been cool if they walked up and the principal was like, well, she's a full-grown adult. She can't come in here. And then they Jedi mind trick him. Like, oh, she's not a full-grown adult. She goes to the school. It's like, oh, she's not a full-grown adult. She goes to the school. Like, if they had shown that, and hung a lantern on it.
Sense.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But no, so she throws her talisman off to symbolize that she doesn't need her magic, and she kisses Brad, and they kiss for a good 20 seconds, and then they hug. And then the movie is fucking over! And again, like I said before, my hands went up, and I said, I cannot believe this is the fucking end of the movie. I have so many questions. I want so much more to happen. What the fuck, Disney? What the fuck? You own Star Wars now, damn it. Let me make my dark remake of this movie. I will bring back at least as much as I put into it.
I don't think that's going to happen, my dear.
So, yeah. Any final thoughts, Ree?
I get that this movie is, like, cheesetastic and that the acting is kind of shit and that there's significant and glaring plot holes, but I still like this movie. I've watched it so many freaking times. I think it's a fun movie. Yeah, is it dumb? Yeah. Does it make sense all the time? Definitely not. But it is one of those movies that I could watch on a rainy Sunday and not be mad. So that's my feelings on it.
Okay. And again, Ree went into this movie knowing it was a childhood favorite of hers and knowing that we were going to rip it apart. So I love you, baby. Thanks for letting us tear this apart in front of you.
I was so mad when you said this movie was picked last time. I was like, what? That movie shouldn't be on there?
I'm waiting for one of my favorite movies to be on here because I don't know if it will be, but...
I just want to point out that one of Jeremy's favorite movies, Ready to Rumble, way worse reviews than this movie did.
You know what? It's not one of my favorite movies. It was one of my favorite movies when I was a teenager. Mike and Ree tried to watch it with me, and they only got about 20 minutes. So,
well, here's the difference is that, first off, Ree, well, I guess we're going on a tangent away from this movie right now, but like, I guess this needs to be addressed a little bit too. So, if you had said, hey, do you want to sit down and watch a really terrible movie with me and we'll do a review on it, I would have said, yeah, sure. And I would have sat through that entire movie and made jokes about how terrible it is.
But well, that's what I'm saying.
You actually think that movie is good, which is, I feel like we should review that movie.
Yeah, fuck yeah.
That's what I'm trying to say is that, that in all fairness, this is going to, my Ready to Rumble is going to go on the backup list because it does have a lower score on Rotten Tomatoes than Teen Witch does. So we'll put it on the list. We'll watch the entire thing. And then we'll let, I will just also say that I was into wrestling when I was in high school. Well, wrestling,
way
quote unquote,
into wrestling.
World Wrestling Entertainment,
WWE.
You know, I was really into wrestling in high school. And so was my best friend. So this movie holds a, you know, a special memory in my heart. For the purposes of the podcast, it will go on the reserve list and it will have the potential to be pulled up. Mike, can you give us final thoughts on Teen Witch?
Well, so throughout the movie, I was kind of just like looking at the clock and seeing how many more minutes were left in the movie, because I really like, I knew where it was going. I knew it was going to end up, but I did sit all the way through it. I did watch every scene, and there were parts of the movie that had their charm. Very small parts, and I think most of the time you guys have already addressed those. I like the scenes where she's interacting with the other witch. She seems like, it seems like there could have been more of those interactions, and the movie yeah. would have been probably better. But then again, like I feel like that the witch was also a more mature actress that had a little bit more depth or ability to act than most of the people in this movie. I also want to point out, it was fun to listen to Ree like dig the hole for this movie and then set a ladder up and then climb back out of it. She pretty much mm-hmm. addressed almost all the major issues with the movie. but I will stand by what I said. Like, if I was a guy in the 80s, I would probably have brought, you know, my date, like a significant other, to this movie to watch it, just because like it does have all those common tropes that you go through in high school. Whether you're a guy or a girl, it's obviously different for guys than it is for girls, but the same tropes of like, you've got a little bit of the picking and the popular kids and all of that stuff going on in high school. And I think this movie addresses that very nicely and probably helps people that were in high school around that time deal with some of the issues and the things that they had to deal with. Like most like movies that are released that have to do with high schoolers, I think it's more about helping high schoolers cope and then giving them some hope of, you know, this isn't the rest of your life. So it does that well, but the rest of it is pretty terrible in my opinion.
Yep. And I just remembered too that when we were watching it, and it was the locker room scene with the I Like Boys dance montage, I made the comment to Ree that I was like, I can't believe I'm a 20-year-old man watching this. I feel really wrong and a little dirty. And she looked at me and she said, I have the weirdest boner right now. Okay. So my love, my life, my reason for living, dying, and being resurrected again.
What do wow. you want?
what would you rate this film?
12-year-old Ree would 100% rate it 10 out of 10 Smacker's lip glosses. Nice. But grown-up Ree would probably rate it 7 out of 10
Smacker's lip gloss.
No, glasses of wine. I have to drink to get through it.
Oh, okay. Wow.
Oh,
okay.
All right.
Oh man. Okay. Well, no, at least I know I'll be having a good time at the end of the movie. And, Mike, what would you give this as a rating?
Oh, I'd say 3 out of 10, can't top that.
Oh man, you took mine for a second week in a row. Son of a bitch.
Well, you should start going first.
I know, I really should. Oh man. Okay. Oh god, fuck me. I will give this movie 4.3 feet.
Feet?
Yeah, I give it a Madam Serena.
Oh, shit.
Nice.
You know what's actually really funny about that actress is that in every like credit she's credited as is either as some sort of medium or witch.
It's got that voice. It's yeah. her voice and her height. And
well, she was all in. She was in Poltergeist. The whole series yep, of Poltergeist.
That makes sense. I remember her now. Yeah. I haven't seen those movies since I was very young.
Yeah.
So, of course, if you liked it or if you disagree with anything we've said, you can shoot us a message through Facebook at RSMPod, or you can shoot us an email at watchthis@rsmpod.com if you have any questions or if you want to add a movie to our reserve list. So, Mike, I don't believe I've had you roll the D20 of Dread yet. Can you grab a D20 and tell me your result?
I can. I will have to make a brief pause while I go get it.
Pausing.
That's okay. Hi, Momo.
A wild kitty appears.
I have returned.
He hath dun, dun, dun. Returned.
My dog Mike. Clotheslined me when I went to go get the D20.
He could literally roll any number right now, and we have no idea if he's telling the truth.
It's true. I think for this, once we roll the D20 dread die, then I need to put some dark, intimidating music while we're preparing. So production note, it's going to start right now. Dun, 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 dun. Mike, yeah. Roll. The D20.
Oh, God.
Die of death.
What did I get?
What'd you roll?
A 3.
What's the movie?
We shall be watching next week the cult classic Ice Pirates.
What?
Oh, this already sounds terrible.
Let me pull it up. Hang on a second.
Ice Pirates?
Yep. Ice Pirates. If you get a chance, watch the trailer. If you like, watch it along with us and see if we hit your favorite parts. And again, if you have anything to add, shoot us an email. We'd love to hear from you, and we'd love to set up a new segment where we're reading listener emails. I think that's the end of our podcast here. Do I have any final words from my two co-hosts tonight?
Really?
Teen Witch is a great movie.
Well, I mean, I think all it takes, like, at the end of the day, if you want to release a movie like this one, is just, you know, believe in yourself.
Ooh,
yeah,
you son of a bitch. You son of a bitch.
They needed to follow through. There's a missing follow through.
Yeah, that movie was all missing follow through. All right, thanks again, listeners. Again, don't forget to like and subscribe on your favorite podcasting vehicle of choice. It really helps us if you give us 5 stars on iTunes and write a little review. Of course, if you do that, we'll make sure to thank you on our next show. Next week, we'll be back with a bonus episode, probably dropping either Saturday or Sunday, more likely Saturday, where we review the independent film Starship Rising. On this podcast, I'm going to try and steer away from independent films for our main episodes because I don't like making fun of people that try their best with what they get. But some movies have to be dealt with. And I feel Starship Rising is one of those. So thanks again, Ree and Mike. I love you both.
Woo. Yeah, I love you too, bye.
I would love you guys nice and hard in an abandoned house.
Are you kidding me, you weirdo?
Nope.
Please do cut that. I mean, not us in the abandoned warehouse, obviously, this part of the segment.
Oh, I would cut you in an abandoned warehouse. All right, good night, guys.